Okay, I left my water at my seat, so we're gonna see how this goes. So I'm Callie, and I'm one of the members here. I'm on leadership, and it is Advent, as Tim mentioned, and Tim also mentioned that there are two layers of Christianity at play here. There's the personal Christianity, and then there's the systemic, bringing people out of Egypt, out of slavery, you know, freeing people, sense of Christianity. It's what we're called to do, and how we're called to, how our hearts are called to change as people, and then how we are called then to go and change the world. So I'm going to talk about that a little bit, and a little bit about Advent. So I've done some Googling research. Advent is the four Sundays before Christmas, and we light these candles and a wreath, and every denomination does it differently, and every candle means a different thing. So I'm not going to make any claims for what the second candle means, except that we just do it. So, ow, I'm a little shaky and I'm burning my thumb, so we'll see if we can. Ow, Jesus. Okay. I think I'm all right. So Advent is a time of preparation. It is time to get ready for Jesus to come to earth. It's time for us to prepare our hearts. I've heard this described as the time when the whole earth is dark and silent and waiting for God to show up. And I like Advent. I love Christmas. I like twinkle lights. But I've always had a hard time connecting with this Jesus. That's kind of the center of Christianity. I joke that my theology is that much more of a Reformed Jew, you know, but I grew up with this guy named Jesus in my life, and so therefore can't convert. But about 6 years ago, on Christmas Eve of all nights, I had a moment. I'm shaky. I had a moment in a warehouse church holding a candle, in which I heard a sermon that really reframed how I understand Jesus. And for me then, it was a reframing of in a personal way, and then now it's become a reframing in that systemic way that Tim has been talking about. So that's what I'm going to talk about. Also, as a disclaimer, I'm going to use personal pronouns for God, and they're going to be male. And so, like, take me out for coffee, and we'll yell about the patriarchy later, but that's just how we're going to, how it's going to go, because personal pronouns, having a personal God to me is more important than having an impersonal God and have it be problematic. Okay, so you ready? About 6 years ago, I was a freshman in college, and the year before, when I was a senior in high school, I had my falling out with God. I was a Christian camp counselor, and there was this one day when we were having our devotional times that summer, and I went out to the swim dock, and I was sitting there, and I was looking out at Lake Whatcom, and I saw the mountains and the forest, and there's this light breeze. And as we all know from A Walk to Remember, God is like that breeze. You can't see it, but you can feel it. And so I thought at that moment, like, is this God? Is this light breeze? Is this natural beauty? Is this God? And then I thought, wait, I've been told that this feeling, that this wind is God. I think I'm making it all up. And so it was that moment at a Christian camp of all places when I was supposed to be meeting God that I then decided that there was none. And so what followed was I had my religious coming out to my parents, in which I sat them down and I told them that I no longer believed in God. And Christianity is pretty much the central identity of my family, not in like a religiosity kind of way, but it's how we grounded our values and our faith. And I was terrified to tell my parents, but I had to because I was working at I was like a youth leader at our church, and I couldn't do it anymore in good faith. And so I said I was no longer a Christian, and my parents were so gracious about it. They, you know, I was really mad because they were like sure that I was going to come back to faith. And I mean, here I am now, but I was really pissed then. You don't know me. I'm going to differentiate myself and find my new way of being. So I went to college without faith. And not having that faith did a few things for me. One, it kind of freed me up to like drink without repercussions of things, and to really like seek that life. I really wanted that life where I could like party and like live like another person who hadn't grown up being told not to. And I really wanted to know what it was like to be normal in that way, like the kids on Gossip Girl. But the more insidious thing that happened was kind of had this falling out with my family. My family was, again, so gracious and so good and always loving that I removed myself. My parents had kind of, like, Tim was born into Christianity, so was I. And I was just mad. I differentiated myself from my parents, and I didn't want that to be part of my identity. I wanted to forge my own. But that meant that the winter break of freshman year of college, I felt really distant. I felt really distant from my family. I felt really distant from this whole orientation to the world that I had once had, this whole belief system. And so I went to church on Christmas Eve with my family, and I was at kind of a time in my life where I couldn't help but cry when I entered a church. I don't think, like, I could say maybe I was, like, moved by the Spirit, but I think I was also just so ashamed that I was here at this place and I didn't believe it, and I felt this huge fissure, like I couldn't bring myself to do this thing that I once loved. And I was with my family, who I felt like I was lying to because I couldn't tell them the whole truth about what I believed, because I didn't really know. I couldn't tell them my whole truth about my Gossip Girl life in DC, because I didn't want to cross that bridge. But then I was at this big warehouse church in Portland, Oregon, with really good music, and we were holding little Advent calendars, or not calendars, candles, very different things. And it was Christmas Eve, and I was hungover because I didn't know how to take care of myself, and this was Eve. Right, this was an evening, and I was still hungover, so I was not feeling very good that day. I was sitting in church, and the message was the one where God meets Moses. The message was about Jesus coming to earth, or God coming to earth as Emmanuel, as God with us. And the pastor told these stories about God and Moses, about the Emmanuel prophecy that we read, about these instances of God coming to earth. And so I'm going to kind of retell a couple of those, hopefully quickly. So in the passage that we heard from Exodus, God meets Moses in a burning bush. If you grew up in the church, you know the story. And if you've seen the VeggieTales or like Prince of Egypt, you also know that Moses had killed a guy in Egypt. Moses was of nobility and kind of through a back door of being adopted by a princess. Moses had killed an Egyptian and had run away from his noble life. And there God is meeting with Moses. Years later, Moses like became a farmer and like lived in the desert. And he had run away and he was ashamed. And needless to say, at this point in my life as an 18-year-old, I kind of identified with that runaway feeling. I identified with Moses just feeling so ashamed that I couldn't really face it. And so when God says, Moses, I am the God of your father. And Moses says, I don't know. Like, I feel ashamed. I feel afraid. But God is like, no, here I am. You are going to do these great things. You had this plan for your life now to run away and be a farmer. And you're okay there. But I have bigger things for you here. And when God reveals his name, when God says, I am who I am, I learned that night, that Christmas Eve, that the ambiguities in the Hebrew translation can also mean that God says his name is, I am who I always have been, and I am who I always will be, or I have been who I always will be. And that, at that moment, holding that candle in that warehouse, that stuck with me, because my problem was a problem of belief. It was a problem that I just couldn't suspend my disbelief for long enough, but I felt in my heart that I wanted this God who would meet me as a runaway, you know, and say, here I am, you are worthy, you are going to do great things. And hearing that God has always been who he always will be and is today kind of freed me up. Like, no matter if I believe in God, he's still there. He still exists. And like, God's existence does not depend on my own intellectual constraints of whether or not I believe in God. So I can have that room to not know and still be kind of in pursuit and in relationship. And my prayer that night then became, God, I don't know if you exist, but if you do, show me who you always have been and who you are and who you will be. And so then that moment, it was early on in the sermon, it kind of freed me up then to really listen. and to really take in this message of Jesus as Emmanuel, as God with us. And the whole Bible, the whole gospel, as we call it, the whole story of God and people and Jesus and humanity is that of, like God and Moses, God is always showing up to runaways and saying, look, you had this plan for your life. We're going to do something different and better. In the Isaiah passage that we read, where Isaiah, the prophet, says there will be this Emmanuel, there will be this Jesus, what's happening is that Ahaz, who I don't know, my biblical history is kind of shaky, but what I know is that Israel is at war with Syria, and Ahaz is terrified. And God says in that passage, test me, ask me for things, I will show up. But Ahaz is like, I don't know. I don't want to test God. I don't want to ask God for anything. Like, I really don't know. I'm too afraid. But God still shows up and says, I know you're afraid, but here I am. Like, I don't care that you're afraid. Here I am. I'm going to change things. There's another Bible story in Hosea when God tells this prophet Hosea to marry a prostitute. And Hosea creates this life and tells the woman, I've created this home for you. You don't need to be out on the streets every night. But the prostitute keeps running away. And Hosea keeps saying, come home, come home. And this is an allegory for God in Israel. And we can see this then with Jesus and the people, that at the time that Jesus enters the world, as Tim said, there was this huge oppressive regime. It was an occupation. The Romans had occupied this land. And Jesus enters the world. And the Jewish religious leaders of that day, the Pharisees and the Sadducees, are perpetrating this huge inequality between like the intellectual elites and like the lay people, like Mary, who gives birth to Jesus. And so Jesus enters the world and says, look, I know you think I meant this one thing, but here, we have a different plan for you. This world is going to be better. I'm going to show up, and we are going to work to free our people of oppression and free our people of this slavery, both personally, the slavery to sin, as we might talk about in like the evangelical world, but also this oppression, this systemic inequality that we perpetrate every day. So at this time in my life, when I was in that warehouse holding that candle, it was a really personal conviction for me. I felt like I had been running away from this God, and from starting then, for a couple of years, I had this really personal relationship with God. God, show me who you are and who you will be. And it was really, again, like intensely personal. But lately, to be honest, for the last few years, I haven't had that. If you study any sort of systems theory, whether it's people or mathematics, you know that when you like disrupt the system, I'm drawing a graph. when you disrupt it, it's gonna go back to equilibrium at some point. It can be a high equilibrium or a low equilibrium, but at some point after a disruption, you kind of stabilize. And that's how I feel. Like I've been in a plateau. Like after I had this understanding of God is personal and God is unhinged on my intellectualism, I have since kind of lost it. But it's actually been over the last couple of weeks with what's happening in Ferguson and with Eric Garner's, with the grand jury thing. I'm feeling a tingling of something again. Something, it's not the personal conviction that I had when I was 18, but now, like Tim mentioned before, I can understand sin, which is like a scary word, but I can understand it in the systemic way that a commentary on society is a commentary on the self, that I'm part of this racist world, and therefore, like, I'm racist. I perpetuate it. You know, like, I'm part of the sexist world, and even though I'm a woman, I am sexist. I just grew up that way. You know, like, we can't help but do that. Like, I think sin is less, like, personal behavior and acting like Serena Vanderwoodson on Gossip Girl, but it's more like we are in these broken systems, and we are actors. We are perpetuators of them. And I think that's, so when I think about Jesus as Emmanuel, as God with us, as coming alongside us, I also think about these systemic issues of the God who showed up and said, Moses, you're going to free your people, of the God who showed up and said, you're going to win this war, of the God who showed up in the form of Jesus and sat next to a woman at the well who had been ostracized from society and said, you are worth it. you're worth it to me. So Advent is about preparation. And I think our country, and I've, at least for me, I've been in dormancy for a while. Oh no. I think we're fine. Nothing's on fire. I've been in dormancy for a while, but I can feel this energy. I can feel things beginning to change on the societal level, and this doesn't happen very often. So Advent, I think, is about preparation. I think it's about tuning in. It's about Moses being willing to stop at that burning bush and say what's going on. So the season, I would say, as we get ready for this thing, or as we are beginning to engage in this big issue, tune in. Just examine your heart. Read Color Lines, which is a great blog. Pay attention. Amen.